It's 10:06, and this is a primary night special on 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's NPR station. It is great to have you with us. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Democrats and Republicans in Georgia selecting nominees for the U.S. Senate, for governor, and for many seats in Congress, and for state legislative seats. So there's a full menu, plus county sheriffs, county commissioners, and many others. We'll run down as many results as we possibly can in this next hour, and we're glad you're along with us. Joining us in the studio, Clark Atlanta political science professor William Boone and former Cobb State Senator Chuck Clay, a former GOP state chair. Right now, let's look at the race that has attracted certainly the most campaign spending. That's the Republican contest for the U.S. Senate nomination. We'll mention on the Democratic side, Michelle Nunn has already been projected the winner really since just about the time the polls closed, beating three opponents. She now has 76% of the vote. But on the Republican side, it is very close. It is a very close fight for the lead. But right now, if the final votes were counted, the folks in the runoff would be David Perdue with 30% of the vote and Jack Kingston with 29% of the vote. But there's still a long way to go, and Karen Handel is in third place with 19%. Presumably, the metro county is still to come in, and that is where Karen Handel is pinning her hopes right now. Paul Brown, Congressman Paul Brown, is a distant fourth with 11%, followed by Congressman Phil Gingrey with 9%. Both of them have held very steady at those percentages all night long. Right now, let's go to David Perdue's headquarters. WABE's Michelle Alloy is there, and that's at the DoubleTree Hotel in Atlanta. David Perdue has a slender lead right now. Michelle, how are they feeling there?
Well, the mood is increasingly upbeat here. Lots of outbursts of tears as Perdue starts to inch past Jack Kingston, who had been leading up until just a few minutes ago. They played songs by the Beach Boys and Miley Cyrus's Party in the USA, which, you know, maybe suggests where they think this race is headed. But now with Perdue leading this very tight race, people here seem a little bit more relaxed. I spoke with Perdue earlier in the evening, and he commented on the back-and-forth attack ads that have really kind of defined this primary race. Other candidates have accused him of wanting to raise taxes, being an elitist, and being too liberal. And Perdue says that he thinks some of those attacks have really worked in his favor, and we've got a cut here from him.
People in this state have seen this before from career politicians. They've come to expect that, and I think that's one reason why we're resonating so well with them.
But still, with about 46 people precincts reporting, they're still knowing which way this race is really going to go, and there's still a lot of votes that have to be tallied.
WABE's Michelle Alloy at the DoubleTree Hotel in Atlanta with Republican Senate candidate David Perdue. Thanks very much, Michelle. And again, to take a look at the gap between first and second and third right now, David Perdue with 94,000 votes plus, Jack Kingston with almost 92,000, Karen Handel in third place, 30,000 votes behind the second place runner right now, Jack Kingston. So if Metro Atlanta is going to come through for her, it'll have to come through big. And the question is, can she do that? That's the question that we've been looking at all night long.
I have to give sort of credit, if you would, to David Perdue. Has run really quite, for a newcomer, there has been little or no gaffes, the one statement that was made early on.
About Karen Handel.
Karen Handel. But by and large, for a guy who we alluded to earlier, has not been under fire and out on the campaign trail, good political name, obviously, like a Nunn or a Carter. It's worked well in the Republican primary. But I have to give his team very high marks for running a masterful. People have commented that they have really liked his ad campaigns by and large. And right now it's showing.
Yeah, I think we have to presume, I think, that Karen Handel will not, well, we have to presume, number one, that Perdue will pick up some votes in the metro area. And that's going to make it extremely tough for Handel to pick up votes, because Kingston will pick up some, too. And therefore, if she's pinning her hopes there, she will have to, she'll have to hope.
Well, she'll probably, I think that she would probably have to hope that she'll pick up votes at the expense of Jack Kingston, because Perdue has managed to get his message out across the state.
But look at the gap. At the moment, the gap is very wide.
30,000 votes.
That's a lot of votes to make up. And we know that both Perdue and Kingston are going to pick up some of those metro votes.
The closest I can remember was when Newt Gingrich was being challenged by Herman Clark and was behind by 1,000 or a few votes, and about 6 North Fulton boxes came in, about 90% for Newt. I've always wondered about that. I would never, I would never even indicate that there might be any chicanery, but he had a very, very, very solid performance that did, in fact, bring him back to victory. In that particular primary fight, but nowhere near the numbers you're talking about, yeah, Professor.
Double digits, 30,000 votes.
I believe the history's already been written on that one. Right. Let's go to the Democratic side now. Michelle Nunn, an easy winner in her race for the Democratic nomination for the U.S. Senate. WABE's Jim Burris is with Michelle Nunn at the Sheraton Hotel in downtown Atlanta. And Jim, she has some pretty high-powered company among the Democrats.
She did. Even as I look at you right now, Dennis, I'm watching current Mayor Team Reed working the crowd in her favor. We also saw Stacey Abrams, the House Minority Leader, in attendance. And former Mayor Shirley Franklin actually opened the speech for her. And before coming into the event tonight, I asked former Mayor Franklin, you know, this is a heavily Republican state, and especially once you get outside of Atlanta, what's that going to look like for Michelle? And this is what she said.
What about in the rest of the state? How does she appeal to Republican Georgia?
Well, I think most people vote regardless of party on what they care about. I think Michelle, as an executive, understands business interests. As a mother and an active participant in her community around the country and around the state, will bring a sensitivity to the campaign that will appeal to people across party lines. It'll appeal to men and women, young people and old people, African Americans, Latinos, newcomers, and old timers.
And I actually asked Michelle Nunn if she'd sought the advice of her father, the former senator from Georgia, and if so, what that was. And her response was that he told her that he never accomplished anything in the Senate without bipartisan support. So bipartisan is the key word tonight. She's also told me in an interview that will air in a bit that civility, she is going to maintain civility through the campaign, that the Republicans fractured themselves in the primary, and that she wants to keep a positive fight going. And she said that despite Georgia being a red state, despite having a Republican lean, that she's going to lean on the three words in Georgia's state motto, which is wisdom, justice, moderation. And that got a big clap from the audience tonight. Dennis?
Jim Burris, who is with Democratic Senate candidate Michelle Nunn at the Sheraton Hotel in downtown Atlanta. Jim, thanks very much.
How long do you think wisdom, justice, moderation will last come 8 October?
Have those been part of any campaign lately? Let's pick up on that, because there's a really interesting challenge that Michelle Nunn faces. And Professor Boone, I'll start with you. Jim Burris talked about the appeal to Republicans. She's going to have to appeal to moderate Republicans and independents at the same time. In order to win, she's going to have to galvanize the Democratic base, appeal to minority voters in Metro Atlanta. That may be why we saw, for instance, Stacey Abrams, Kasim Reed, Shirley Franklin, all there together. How does she pull that off? Is she able to appeal to moderate Republicans while getting the kind of turnout that a President Obama would? Now, that would be too high a goal. But she's going to have to pull a lot of excite a lot of minority voters in Metro Atlanta.
She really has to. I mean, the primary campaign that she ran was a campaign aimed primarily at conservatives, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. I mean, she had former George H.W. Bush's hand on her shoulder, not Obama's hand. So that gives you an indication of what kind of campaign she plans to run in the general election. Now,
will I get her the vote she needs to win among the base?
That's the question, because the base may begin to raise questions. Now, we have Mayor Franklin and Mayor Reed and a couple of others who are supporting her. But I think we know that Mayor Reed has very short coattails when it comes to getting folk elected. Franklin may have a better chance than Reed in terms of doing that. But that's going to call for a ceasefire between Reed and Franklin in order to bring the party together.
Yeah, they have not been singing from the same page lately.
And also Reed has to get on page with the state Democratic Party as well, because he's not there. All I'm saying is there are a lot of elements out here in order for Nunn to really bring in that African-American or black vote, she will have to do. Number one, there is currently, and I know this will be an issue that will be raised, is the Voting Rights Act amendment is now going through Congress. There are a good many groups that are now opposed to that particular revision of the act. She will have to take a stand on that one way or the other. Her early stand on that was rather wishy-washy, as you well know, and she got a lot of pushback on that for the way she answered the question. So she has to do a lot about that. The only thing that's going to happen is that if indeed she can get a Reed or a Franklin to come up and talk to the black community in a way to say, look, we've got to let her do it this way, because at the end of the day, she is on our side, as opposed to. And that is one of the things you have to do. But getting them out to vote is going to be the key for her.
Chuck Clay, how do you think she walks that tightrope? Because she's going to have to appeal to some folks from your party as well.
I'm rarely in the business of either lauding or applauding my Democrat friends, and I mean that sincerely. I used to always get my standard sort of speech at the party was, if you can't count to 50 plus one, you're not in politics, you're in a debating society. Mm-hmm. And I still think, as a professor pointed out, getting to 50 plus one is going to be not insurmountable. The one thing that I will say about the Democrats now, when you look down at a Michelle Nunn and a Jason Carter and whatever the internal party politics might be with a Kasim or Stacey Abrams and other leaders, the light has gone on about repositioning themselves as the party of the center. I don't think they're there yet. I think that creates a real challenge because these are A candidates. This is not a B or C list. These are A candidates. And if there are stumbles or further economic issues, things that might occur out there, these are the type of candidates who can take advantage of it. I don't see the 50 plus one this year, but I see a party that is rebuilding itself to be a contender.
Let's take a look now at a race we talked about a little bit earlier. And if you've just joined us, this is a live primary night special on 90.1 WABE. There are crowded fields in both parties for state school superintendent. On the Democratic side right now, Valerie Wilson leads with 32% of the vote. Alicia Morgan, state representative, with 25%. And on the Republican side, a very crowded field. Michael Buck still holding to a lead with 20% of the vote. Richard Woods with 18%. Everyone else following behind that. Nancy Jester, who is the former DeKalb County School Board member, is right now running in fifth place with just 10% of the vote in that Republican field. But again, this is with about half of the precincts reporting. So let's go to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution's education columnist Maureen Downey. Maureen, how are you?
I am fine. I'm sitting on my couch in my pajamas listening to the three of you.
At least we're keeping you awake.
You are. Not quite
lonely,
eating bonbons.
Lonely life.
Yeah, and looking at the results as they come in here on these two races.
Are you surprised that Nancy Jester is at this point trailing by as much as she is? Because she had a lot of support from sort of the Republican punditry in the metro Atlanta area, and she got a lot of attention for not fighting for her DeKalb County seat, basically saying, you know, when the governor replaced that DeKalb school board, hey, look, you know, we did have a problem, and I'm going to step aside and fight another day.
You know, I'm not too surprised about Nancy Jester. I think Nancy had a high profile in metro Atlanta, but I'm not sure voters in Savannah or Augusta follow the turmoil of the DeKalb County School Board. And Nancy could be dismissed fairly quickly by her opponents by them simply saying, well, you know, the governor removed all of those school board members. And her sort of personal battle there and what she considers her integrity of sort of resigning first, I'm not sure anybody would get to read that small print and see that. So I'm not as surprised as Nancy about Nancy Jester. I'm a little surprised that the sort of the two guys who seem to have the seal of approval from the party, Ashley Bell and Fitz Johnson on the GOP side, are not doing so well. I did see them in a debate on Sunday night, and I did think that neither of them were well steeped in education issues, and I think that came through. So I'm not sure if these last few debates had a role, because I think when people saw these guys, they talked a lot about leadership and they talked a lot about people skills and loving children, but I think that their lack of education backgrounds came through with so many educators in both these races, Democrat and Republican.
Let's stick with the Republican side for a minute, and then we'll jump to the Democrats. But had most Republican voters, with the possible exception of Nancy Jester in Metro Atlanta or in DeKalb, had most Republican voters heard of any of these folks?
I would think not. I mean, there's no sort of superstar names on this Republican marquee. However, there are some people who have been working in the field. So what I think both these races are telling us is that these sort of folks who are out in the trenches, like Mike Buck, who is a DOE, a top leader in DOE, he's got contact with school districts all over the country. And I think what we had here is a little bit of that game of telephone, where somebody like Mike Buck, he worked well with their district, and they might have told their school board member, and their school board members might have told a couple teachers. I mean, I think there was more word of mouth here than probably we can actually account for because of the way it happens. And I think that's why you're seeing Mike Buck and Richard Woods. I will also again say, though, that these guys do shine in the debates, because in debates you ask education questions, and these guys know education, so they can answer, and they can answer with expertise, and they speak with authority. And so I think that did help. I think that the fact that they knew the topic has helped them, obviously.
Has Common Core been as big of an issue among Republican voters in deciding who to vote for as perhaps we might have thought?
I will say this. The third person in the Republican race, Mary Kay Bacalhau, she's trailing Buck and Woods, but she is in third place, and her only issue was Common Core. So I have to say that there apparently is a Common Core voter out there, but she got that Common Core voter. The other voters, I think, are broader, and that's why I think you're going to see the educators who speak on the broad base, Buck and Woods, those types. I think Common Core did have a certain amount of people concerned about it, but probably not enough of them to tip this election.
Looking at the Democratic side, Valerie Wilson now leading, has a fairly substantial lead, 32% of the vote, again with about half the precincts reporting, a little bit more. And then Alicia Morgan, state representative from Cobb County, with 25% of the vote. It appears that they are the ones who are headed for a runoff, although no one has projected that yet. Valerie Wilson, of course, with a lot of association with teacher organizations. Alicia Morgan got a lot of attention because she broke with the Democratic Party over charter schools, for instance, and vouchers and things like that. This Democratic race, it could be a very interesting runoff if these are the two that survive.
Right, and these were the two that I think I expected and many people expected to survive. And the interesting thing about positioning Valerie Wilson and Alicia Morgan in a runoff is that when the charter school fight was raging in 2012, Valerie Wilson was the face of the Georgia School Boards Association because she was the president. So they put videos out on her. Valerie spoke in debates. So it's interesting that in some respects, Valerie and Alicia have in fact squared off before in terms of the charter school amendment. You spoke earlier to the Decatur journalist who spoke about, well, he was surprised about Valerie because she's, been a Decatur school board member and the chair of the Decatur school board for 6 years. But she has a great state presence because of that service as the president of the Georgia School Boards Association. And going back to my comment about Mike Buck, Valerie Wilson knows a lot of school boards across the state as a result of that. And I think that level, those folks talked her up. Those folks talked her up to their folks. So I think we're seeing some of that coming out. I'm a little surprised that Alicia Morgan is not ahead of Valerie Wilson, simply because Alicia Morgan is an incredible speaker. She has the, she has a great resume, having been elected in Cobb at age 23. She has, in fact, broken with the Democratic Party over charter schools, over the tax credit, over vouchers, kinds of things. I mean, she's a choice advocate in a big way, and she makes no apologies for it. So I think that she's going to get that choice vote. I will point out that the other four candidates in the Democratic side are four educators. And they clearly, because I actually was on the panel for their debate, they clearly don't support Alicia Morgan. So it'll be interesting in the runoff if all of their votes, based on what I saw in the debate, yeah, they will encourage their supporters clearly to go to Valerie Wilson.
Maureen Downey, Atlanta Journal-Constitution education columnist, thank you so much. We enjoyed this, and we'll be talking to you again soon.
And I'll be listening for the rest of the night to you guys, so enjoy.
Okay, order some bonbons.
I will. Bye-bye.
It's an interesting race with Alicia and Valerie. If Alicia were a Republican right now, you'd almost have a set-piece battle on the issue of really the issue of charter versus public K through 12.
And two African-American women.
Absolutely.
It's going to come down to, you know, it appears that it was going to come down to a runoff between Alicia and Valerie. And choice is going to be the main topic. There's no doubt about it. With the strong support that Alicia Morgan has given charters and her affiliation with charter schools is going to be put on front page by Valerie, who is a strong advocate for public schools or so-called traditional.
And certainly will have an effect on the Republican nominee, whoever that is.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to take a break right now. We will be right back as our primary night 2014 special continues on 90.1 WABE. It's great to have you along. I'm Dennis O'Hare.
John Lemley. On the next City Cafe, a talk with the Ritz Chamber Players, the nation's first African-American chamber music ensemble.
We all decided, what is a way that we can engage our own community that they can begin to love classical music as much as we do?
It's beginning at noon on the Wednesday edition of City Cafe.
Atlanta Sounds. Hear the city.
My name is Larry Douglas Embry. I am the organist in residence of the Atlanta Fox Theater. There's a plaque to the left on the organ, M.P. Moeller. It was an organ company in Hagerstown, Maryland, and so we lovingly refer to it as Mighty Mo.
Atlanta Sounds from listeners supported 90.1.
And if you've got a sound idea for this series, why not tell us about it at wabe.org/Atlanta Sounds. Our primary night 2014 special continues on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare, joined once again by former Cobb County State Senator and former State GOP Chair Chuck Clay and Professor William Boone, Professor of Political Science at Clark Atlanta University. We've been talking a lot about the U.S. Senate races, but because of Saxby Chambliss's retirement, there's a domino effect. Many of the state's members of Congress, especially on the Republican side, are running for his seat, so their seats are open. Let's take a look at some of the congressional races on both sides. In District 3, one of the incumbents who did not decide to run for Senate, Lynn Westmoreland, is cruising right now to renomination over Chip Flanagan, 69-31% of the vote. Hank Johnson in the 4th District here in Metro Atlanta. This is on the Democratic side. Hank Johnson now widening a lead over former DeKalb Sheriff Tom Brown, 55-45%. But again, just over a third of the precincts reporting in that race, so it may be a while before we know for sure. The 10th District Republican race, this is the one to replace Paul Brown. Mike Collins and Jody Heiss are well ahead of the rest of the field, including State Representative Donna Sheldon. They have 34% each, Collins and Heiss, with Donna Sheldon a distant third with 14%. And this is now with almost two-thirds of the precincts reporting in that race. District 11, this is Phil Gingrey's seat on the northwestern side of Metro Atlanta. State Representative Barry Loudermilk is leading right now with 40% of the vote, not enough to avoid a runoff, but he has an easy lead right now over Bob Barr, the former congressman who is trying a political comeback. But he could make the runoff. Barr could. He has 26% of the vote. Tricia Pridemore is a distant third with 15% of the vote. And Metro Atlanta State Representative Ed Lindsay is a distant fourth right now with 12% of the vote. In a six-person field. 12th District Republican, this is the battle to take on John Barrow in the eastern and southeastern part of the state. Rick Allen is right now ahead of four challengers, and he could avoid a runoff. Right now he has 54% of the vote. If he holds that, he will avoid a runoff and take on John Barrow in November. But again, we've got about two-thirds of the precincts reporting in that race. In District 13, on the Democratic side, Congressman David Scott, an easy renomination win over Michael Owens, 81% of the vote for Congressman Scott. And in the 14th District, incumbent Tom Graves is cruising to renomination on the Republican side, 74-26% over Kenneth Herron. We mentioned Congressman Hank Johnson in the 4th District widening his lead on the Democratic side over challenger Tom Brown. Let's now go to WABE's Lisa George, who is with the Hank Johnson campaign, and she's at the Hilton Garden, at Jolie in South DeKalb County. Lisa.
Hey, Dennis. There are a couple of hundred people here, and they're all having a good time, but there's not a lot of ups and downs. As you have reported, the numbers have stayed fairly constant for the last hour or so. It is my understanding that all the returns from Newton and Rockdale counties are now in. So what we're waiting on are returns from DeKalb County. And, of course, Hank Johnson's opponent is the former sheriff of DeKalb County. As you also know, tonight the race will be decided. There is no Republican challenger. I talked with Hank Johnson just a couple of minutes ago, and he said that his confidence continues to grow, even though those percentages have stayed pretty much the same for the last hour or so. And as you said, we only have about a third of the returns in.
Lisa, as you look at DeKalb County, has anyone had the sense that since they're both well known there, as you alluded to, that Tom Brown could close the gap?
Well, certainly nobody here at Johnson headquarters is saying that right now. They all seem very confident. Every time they see the numbers come back or somebody reports numbers, a cheer goes up. But, of course, those numbers, those percentages have stayed static for the past hour or so. Nobody's talking anything about the gap being closed. But perhaps that's a little bit of the elephant, if you will, in the room, despite the fact that this is an all-Democratic race.
We love mixed metaphors here.
Yeah.
Lisa George at Hank Johnson's headquarters at Jolie in South DeKalb County. Lisa, thanks very much.
My pleasure.
Yeah, let's take a look at that. Talking about not just this particular race that Lisa just reported on, but we'll take a look at some of the other congressional races as well. But starting with DeKalb County, Professor Boone, is it possible to say which candidate might have the upper hand once DeKalb starts to come in? Is there one or the other who is better organized there?
Actually, Brown has a fairly good organization in DeKalb County. We really can't
say.
He's run countywide for several years as sheriff, and he's done fairly well with that. Hank's organization is a bit more spotty, but he's running based upon incumbency than anything else, and name recognition. And I think that's going to be the telling point. Also, you have to wonder why. Well, I don't wonder. I mean, know why, but you wonder whether or not Tom can really cut into Hank's deep support in South DeKalb County, because that's where it is.
And that's where a lot of those are sometimes the last precincts to come
very
in.
Very last precincts to come in. Every time I've done one of these, the last precincts to come in. And we have Rockdale already in, Newton is already in, so we'll know. And I'd like to know what's happening up in North DeKalb. to see just what's happening there. Because if that, too, has come in, then I think Tom Brown's has shot his best shot.
Chuck Clay, let's take a look at some of the Republican contests for some of those open seats. Bob Barr attempting a comeback in the 11th District. He's trailing Barry Loudermilk right now, 40% to 26%. But if there is a runoff, he would be the number two candidate right now. Tricia Pridemore, who has a lot of GOP kind of establishment support, party insiders,
I'm a little surprised,
is only running at 15% right now. And Ed Lindsay, who comes from a deeply Republican district in Metro Atlanta and had quite a TV presence, is only getting 12%. What's happening here?
Well, some of this, you go back to traditional geopolitics. Loudermilk is up from one of the large population bases with the Bartow area. Strong, both social conservative.
Part of that district.
Large part of the district. And what he has done very well is not only sort of captured the Tea Party social conservative side, but he's also cast himself kind of successfully as sort of the Chamber of Commerce business candidate at the same time. And I give him high marks for being able, at least so far, to pull it off. I got this one a little bit wrong. I really thought Tricia, and maybe it still votes out there. Bob's a former old law partner from years back, and I thought maybe, that would be a steep hill to sort of reinvent yourself. But right now, I give him credit for at least looking like he's headed for a runoff. In a runoff, all bets are off. Cut that turnout to about a quarter to a third of the earlier vote, and anybody wins it. So that one's not over. Ed Lindsay, an absolutely outstanding state legislator. Unfortunately for him, he came from the smallest slice of that district in Fulton County. And if you're up from Cobb or Cherokee or Bartow, it's just in your genes that you kind of think that that's that silk stocking crowd over across the river who thinks we're a little less we're a little worthy. I'm being facetious on that. A great candidate, steep hill to climb just upon where his base was located in the district.
And in the 10th district, this is Paul Brown's district up northeast part of the state. Mike Collins and Jody Heiss splitting the vote right now, 34% each. Donna Sheldon, one of the leaders among the Republicans in the state legislature, in the state house, really a very distant third with 14%. Are you surprised by any of that?
I am. And again, I can always prove that I can be as wrong as anybody in the room. Donna has been, a real leader, and this is no criticism to the others. I guess I've worked with her, and I've known and respected what she has done. It'd be interesting for postmortems if that stays the same, a little debrief, because I am surprised. She's articulate, attractive, smart, I think came from a good part of the district, but the other two guys have obviously put the pieces together better. Just that simple.
Any idea what exactly? I mean, you mentioned you might take postmortems to know, but could you see anything happening in that campaign that would have predicted this, the way that the candidates position themselves?
I'm really not close enough. I don't know whether this was one of ideology or whether it was one of geography, and I suspect a little bit of both. Donna was always a consensus builder. She was out there. You never can use words like moderate anymore in the Republican Party unless that absolutely consign you to immediate defeat. But I think she was running like Ed Lindsay on being a doer in the General Assembly at a time where I think in primaries particularly people want to know more about your philosophy, your ideology, and sort of your political gut check. And just think in that basis, the more conservative tends to have the advantages in a Republican primary.
One other quick note, and this is sort of a follow-up to a story that has played out over this past year. In a state Senate Republican primary, Don Balfour, the incumbent and former Rules Committee chair who was acquitted on charges that he had falsified his expense reports, found not guilty. He is losing right now in a three-person race. He is running third with about half of the precincts reporting. He has just under 29%. Mike Boudreaux with 35%. And
former
PK
commissioner.
Martin, yep, and P.K. Martin with 36%.
Both good candidates. We know the travails and political difficulties Don has been in, and the fact that he was acquitted did not change just a sort of series of negative reporting, whether you agree or disagree. But I do want to say publicly on the air, his son has been was seriously yes. wounded in Afghanistan. Our thoughts and prayers go out to him. That's obviously the most important thing in his life, and God bless them all.
Let's go back to Jack Kingston's headquarters right now. He is running second to David Perdue at last check in that crowded field for the U.S. Senate nomination on the Republican side. Ellie Yu is at the Georgia Tech Hotel and Conference Center. Ellie.
Yeah, the room has gotten even more packed, it seems, as the night goes on and the election results are coming in. People are sporting I-back Jack stickers. Representative Kingston spoke to his supporters earlier tonight, about 45 minutes ago. He told them he's feeling very good about the position that he's in.
Yes, I am optimistic. I think it'll turn out all right. And Jack has a good attitude toward things, you know. I think he can roll with the punches, but he can celebrate with the victories, too. So
that was Ann Kingston, actually, his mother, who was one of the first ones here to arrive. She is sticking it out through the night. She is very optimistic. You know, supporters have been telling me all night that they're supporting Kingston because of his history in Congress as a representative. And most are feeling pretty optimistic. One supporter I spoke with and from Savannah says that the night is still young, that that they're still waiting on parts of Southeast Georgia to report.
WABE's Ellie Yu with Republican Senate candidate Jack Kingston at the Georgia Tech Hotel and Conference Center. Ellie, thanks, and we'll hear back from you. To look at that race once again, David Perdue in first place right now with 30% of the vote. Jack Kingston in second place with 28%. Those are the two runoff positions right now. Karen Handel in third with 20%. She now trails by about some 22,000 votes short of that second runoff position. So she is starting to pick up a little bit from where she was.
Yeah, I mean, that's definite movement. I mean, as long as that gap is closing and until we know where all the outstanding sort of precincts are, I don't call that race over by any shot at this point in time.
Paul Brown and Phil Gingrey with 10% respectively. They have not moved really all night.
Paul's, I kind of felt that his base was whatever he had was what he had when he began this. I'm a little bit surprised that Dr. Gingrey, as we've discussed earlier, Congressman Gingrey has not run better, but there couldn't be a finer man, and this sometimes the slot you're looking for just doesn't materialize. But those two, you're right, have stayed pretty much stagnant since the evening began.
Could you think that Gingrey probably just wasn't quite clear on which way he was going early on in this race, as whether or not he was going to move towards the Tea Party or move towards a more establishment Republican? That's the feel I got and following his campaign.
Yes. I, for whatever reason, it never seemed to find its legs as to exactly which voter it was trying to appeal to. As you well know, often some of the very best candidates wind up losing badly, and they don't understand why. And when it's said and done, it's almost invariably because they didn't define who the voter is. What is the base that if they know who I am, they should or I think will vote for me? And I just did not feel that other than conservative Republicans, there was a sense of this is the base that I'm targeting, that if I tell my story, they'll vote for me.
Yeah, because the story kept varying. You know,
you're talking about Gingrich's story?
Gingrich's story kept varying from this far right-wing fellow to a guy who was very compassionate in terms of moving towards his constituents' needs. It kept bouncing back and forth.
It's a dilemma in a Republican primary because there's not a finer man. And somebody who's been a physician, a successful businessman, father, leader, good-hearted person. Kind of person you do like in politics, but sometimes a cycle comes and goes, and maybe it's time to either get back to delivering babies or enjoy his retirement.
Well, he did indicate that he would retire.
Yeah, absolutely. I sure hope so. He's earned it.
Yeah.
He's earned it.
A couple of the other races now. In the DeKalb County Sheriff's race, this is the one where Vernon Jones is attempting a political comeback. The incumbent, Jeff Mann, who hasn't been sheriff all that long, is leading with 39% of the vote. Vernon Jones in second place with 22%. Melvin Mitchell, who had quite a social media and email campaign going, is a distant third right now with 15% of the vote, and that's a crowded field behind that. But at the moment, if the count stopped now, and it's not, Jeff Mann and Vernon Jones would be in a runoff. What does that say? I mean, Vernon Jones, Professor Boone, Vernon Jones, near as anyone can tell, doesn't have a whole lot of law enforcement experience. He's been a state legislator. He's been a CEO. He's run for Senate. He's run for Congress. But why sheriff?
That's a good question. I've always categorized this run by Vernon Jones as his last hurrah. I mean, quite frankly, on a more serious note, Jones has to win this campaign if he intends to move further up. Because if he loses this campaign, I think it's probably pretty much over for him. Now, he's tried to address the question of a lack of law enforcement experience by simply saying the sheriff is really an administrator, and I've been an administrator, so he wants to run that kind of campaign. He's also avoided any kind of debates with these guys, most of whom are former law enforcement people, for that very reason. So Jones really is attempting to I suspect, and this is pure speculation on my part, and political scientists hardly ever speculate, right?
Like an economist.
Vernon is looking for bigger offices later on down the road.
Yeah. So this would be a stepping stone if he were to
get him back into the public's eye.
He's a good candidate. You can't ever count that Vernon out.
You can't count him out. I don't think you can count him out.
Speaking of political comebacks, Chuck Clay, let's move to your county, Cobb County. There is a political comeback being attempted there in one of the district county commission races on the Republican side. Former Cobb Commission Chair Bill Byrne is leading a field right now of five candidates. He has 27% of the vote. Angela Barner in second with 25%. This one's definitely headed to a runoff.
Clearly.
But Bill Byrne, a feisty, opinionated, blunt-talking commissioner and commission chairman, and he ran for governor at one point. Why come back now?
Well, as they say, the only cure for politics is embalming fluid, and I think there continues to be a certain amount of truth to that. Bill was a very successful. You can have his admirers, detractors, but he was a very strong and successful leader of the Cobb Commission. I think he has both the time and a continued passion for policy. Angela's run a good campaign. I'm mildly surprised. She is the daughter of my cohort when I served as a county commissioner, Harvey Pascal. So she comes by her political background and bloodline very legitimately. Harvey served for many, many years. I've forgotten how many terms on the Cobb Board of Commissioners, and was as shrewd and good a politician as I ever worked with out there. So it'll be interesting to see whether it's the new blood or the old blood that tried to go back to a former proven leader that certainly had some detractors, or a newer, fresher face, but who certainly comes from a political pedigree there in Cobb County.
Well, let me ask you quickly. The demographics in Cobb are changing since he served as county commissioner, right?
Yes, sir.
County chair. And one wonders whether or not he can adjust to that change in demographics.
I think that's the question. The district that he's running in, which is the area that I used to represent, is probably still the most solidly, in many respects, Republican
district.
Part of that county. Not exclusively, but very much the northwest, northeast. Is pretty solid core Republican area where he's going to have a solid base. I'm a little bit surprised because there was a good amount of controversy, but again, when you got a small turnout, a lot of candidates dividing up that vote, he's got a committed core base. Mm-hmm. And it's going to show up, and it's going to show up every time. And whether it pulls him through it in a runoff is a different issue. But I don't know. Sometimes the same. Politics, in some respects, never changes. The principle is the same. Sometimes the candidates come back, and I give him credit. He's not shy about expressing his opinion on any subject.
Let's take a look at a couple of the other Cobb Commission races, because the Braves Stadium vote enters into some of these, perhaps. In District 3, Joanne Burrell, this is on the Republican side. She is holding a slim lead, or actually, excuse me, a fairly substantial lead over Michael Opitz, Joseph Pond, a distant third. But Joanne Burrell, if she maintains this margin, and we have really fragmentary returns in on this one, would get in without a runoff, but it's way too early to tell. A lot of these just handfuls of votes being counted. Timothy Stultz, another incumbent, is trailing right now, but again, just a few votes in on that one. Right. Susan Thayer leading him in that race, but we hesitate to even say that because we're talking about just a few score votes here. Scott Sweeney, another incumbent, being challenged by Kevin Nicholas. This is in District 6 on the Republican side. Is the Braves Stadium vote a big issue for these incumbents? Because all but one commissioner voted for it, and we have some primary challengers.
I think maybe the challenger would have, I don't think it's as big a vote. I think it's one of those things that there are certain core group of folks, but I think if you looked out across the board, there would, by and large, most folks in Cobb County, I think, are enormously proud. There's always going to be an issue on a public-private project like
this. Yeah, I think less about the stadium than about the way the vote was
taken,
done.
Right.
And that's where the commissioners caught heat, was not just because of the project itself, but because of how they conducted the vote.
I mean, you're absolutely correct, though. I think when it's all said and done, I've generally found that over the years, if you're going to do a deal like this and it needs to be sort of secret, there ain't no way to keep it secret once you've once you've opened the public debate. I'm not saying that it was perfect politically, but it worked. And I think by and large, most Cobb Countyans are proud to have the opportunity to have a pro franchise, baseball franchise in our backyard.
We'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back with our primary night 2014 coverage on 90.1 WABE. Thanks for being with us. I'm Dennis O'Hare. We'll be back in just a moment.
Young mother got a driving ticket she couldn't pay. Fees mounted up. So the court gave her another option.
Mommy was in jail, honey. Mommy won't ever go to jail again, though, I promise you. Mommy went to jail because I couldn't pay money. I didn't have money to pay. That's why I went to jail.
I'm Renee Montaigne, Modern Debtor's Prison, on the next morning edition from NPR News.
I'm John Lemley. On the next City Cafe, a talk with the Ritz Chamber Players, the nation's first African-American chamber music ensemble.
We all decided, what is the way that we can engage our own community that they can begin to love classical music as much as we do?
It's beginning at noon on the Wednesday edition of City Cafe.
It's 10:54. The primary night special continues on 90.1 WABE, streaming live at WABE.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at WABE News. Thanks for coming along with us. I'm Dennis O'Hare with Clark Atlanta political science professor William Boone and former Cobb State Senator Chuck Clay, who's also a former chair of the state GOP. Speaking of the state GOP, on the Republican side, in the governor's race, Governor Nathan Deal, an easy winner without a runoff over David Pennington and John Barge, 72% of the vote for Deal. He has long since been projected the winner in that race. However, on the Senate side of the ballot for the Republicans, David Perdue still clinging to a 2 percentage point lead over Jack Kingston, about 116,000 votes for Perdue. Kingston, some 7,000 votes behind that. Karen Handel, with 20% of the vote, now has to make up some more ground. She is trailing Kingston by some 30,000 votes in the drive to take over that second spot and get into a runoff with David Perdue, who is running first right now. Congressman Paul Brown and Phil Gingrey running well behind with 10% of the vote each. On the Democratic side, Michelle Nunn is the winner in the race for the Senate nomination. 75% of the vote for Michelle Nunn in a four-person field. A couple of the other races that we've been watching all evening. In the race for the Democratic nomination for the U.S. House in District 4, Hank Johnson, the incumbent, leading Tom Brown, the former DeKalb County Sheriff, 55% to 45%. But that is with just over a third of the precincts reporting, so no way to make a call on that one yet. The winner of this race, though, goes to Congress. There is no Republican running in that district. In the state school superintendent's race right now on the Democratic side, Valerie Wilson holding to a lead over Alicia Morgan, 32% to 25%, with four more candidates trailing behind that. An even more crowded field on the Republican side, Michael Buck and Richard Woods, the two front runners right now, 20% for Buck, 18% for Woods. Former DeKalb school board member Nancy Jester is running right now in fifth place. She has 10% of the vote. Professor Boone, just turning to you for a moment, we're starting to see a little bit of a pattern here in the U.S. Senate race on the Republican side, where Jack Kingston, David Perdue, closely bunched, Karen Handel still trying to make up that ground and get into that second position. Does she have a way in?
It's going to be very difficult. I think you said that earlier. It's going to be very difficult for her to do that. Maybe in the Metro Atlanta, she may pick up some votes, but I go back to the whole point that you need to understand that both Kingston and Perdue will pick up votes in the Metro area, primarily for Perdue because he comes off as a more moderate kind of conservative. Handel, I think, has positioned herself in a way that gives her a little more of the kind of maybe just outside of the moderate market here in this area. People that she brought in, the former governor of Alaska, other folk. I think that sort of
Sarah Palin. And Jan Brewer.
I mean, that sort of colors her campaign to some extent in terms of defining who she is and what kind of person she will be to some extent. But, you know, and her the folk have been able to paint her as a rather extreme person to some extent. Whether or not that's taken or not, we have to see. But I think it's very tough. I don't think she has the kind of pull, and I take issue with something, in the metro area that I think some think she has. She doesn't have it. The other candidates come off as people who probably can win in this election.
Who could beat Michelle Nunn.
Michelle Nunn.
But that's been Karen Handel's argument. She had said in several debates, just let the Democrats try to pull the war on women thing.
And you see me fight, know, that's a Sarah Palin kind of stance, if you recall. You know, you haven't seen me fight yet, you know, I'm a bit bare and this kind of thing. But I'm not quite sure that she's the kind of person they want to send that way. Nunn is certainly going to try to move as far to the right as she can without falling off of the cliff. Without falling, without losing her base. But at the same time, you're going to get a fellow like Kingston, I'm sorry, like Perdue, who already portrays himself in that particular mode, stands a better chance of competing against her. And I think it cannot rule out the whole national thrust here to try to hold on to this seat. Because all they need is six.
We got to take a break for NPR News in just a moment. But Chuck Clay, one of the things that Karen Handel got a great deal of attention for, and she attracted both support and criticism for it, was her face-off with Planned Parenthood.
Sure.
It certainly raised her name recognition, even though she had run statewide before as Secretary of State. In the end, you would think that would help her in a GOP primary like this. From what you've been hearing in Republican circles, did it make a difference?
It's interesting. I tend to always go back to sort of the traditional sort of makes or breaks of campaigns. And you start with money. You start with organization. You start with a record, whether you're defending it or you're proud of it. I think that I didn't see the money coming in this time that indicated to me quite the level of intensity or enthusiasm. What's interesting is you wind up in this case with the businessman who says he's the can-do guy and a congressman who probably has the best record of being a can-do congressman for critical projects for Georgia right now as leaders. Not typically what many have said they would see at the national level.
And so you're saying that it was Karen Handel had to find a place to go to identify herself to GOP voters.
Well, unlike a lot of the country, and I could just come back to Georgia, we have two very practical candidates right now in first and second, and that seems to be bucking a national trend, and I think it's good for Georgia.
Of course, the night is not over. No. Karen Handel could certainly make up ground in Metro Atlanta and work her way into a runoff, but we shall see. This is 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's NPR station. I'm Dennis O'Hare. We will continue for another half hour when we come back. Right now, the news from NPR. It's 11:01.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jim Hawk. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky has survived a primary challenge. McConnell told supporters in Louisville that Republicans intend to win a majority in the U.S. Senate.
For 5.5 years, the powers that be in Washington have treated the people of this state with contempt. And tonight, I have a simple message for all of them. Those days are numbered.
Democrat Allison Lundergan Grimes won the U.S. Senate nomination in Kentucky to face McConnell in the fall. In other elections across six states, Michelle Nunn has won her Democratic primary in Georgia's Senate race, while a runoff is likely in a crowded GOP field. Two car bombs exploded Tuesday in Nigeria's central city of Jos, killing at least 118 people and wounding dozens more. The BBC's Will Ross reports on the coordinated terror attack.
The area that was targeted was a busy market. When the victims of the first blast were being taken to the nearby hospital, the second bomb was detonated. Both had been concealed in vehicles. There were scenes of chaos as people tried to help the injured. Body parts were strewn across the area. Although it's not known who carried out the attack, the Islamist extremist group known as Boko Haram has targeted Jos City before, bombing several churches in what were then seen as efforts to foment religious violence.
The BBC's Will Ross. A federal judge in Pennsylvania has struck down the state's ban on same-sex marriage as unconstitutional. NPR's Nina Totenberg reports the ruling is the latest in a growing chain of federal and state court decisions upholding the right to marry for gay and lesbian couples.
Since the Supreme Court last year struck down the key provision of the federal law barring recognition of same-sex marriage, the federal and state courts have been rife with challenges to state bans on same-sex marriage. Judge John Jones III in Pennsylvania became the latest federal judge to strike down a ban. Federal judges have now struck down bans on same-sex marriage in 13 states, and state court judges have struck down bans in another 3 states. In many of these states, judges have temporarily blocked these rulings pending appeal, but the wave of decisions makes it all but certain that the issue will reach the United States Supreme Court sooner rather than later. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
The close call between two planes at Newark Liberty International Airport has prompted changes in the airport's takeoff and landing procedures. The Federal Aviation Administration says arriving planes will no longer use one runway at the same time planes are taking off on another. Disappointing results from several major retailers have sent the stock market to relatively steep losses. Staples dropped 13% after the office supply chain said its earnings fell sharply in the latest quarter, while Dick's Sporting Goods plunged 18% after its earnings and revenue fell short of expectations. You're listening to NPR News in Washington. India's Hindu Nationalist Party formally chose Narendra Modi as the country's next prime minister following the party's election victory. India's president then invited Modi to form a new government. From New Delhi, NPR's Julie McCarthy reports Modi is expected to be sworn in next Monday.
President Pratab Mukherjee congratulated Modi as he greeted the 63-year-old prime minister in waiting with a bouquet of flowers at the president's palace. Modi's BJP will assume power as the first opposition party to achieve achieve a majority of seats in the powerful lower house of parliament. Modi adroitly campaigned as capable of delivering economic development to India. He also overcame allegations that he looked the other way during religious riots in 2002 that killed more than 1,000 people, mostly Muslims, in his home state of Gujarat. Modi was denied a visa to the United States because of the riots, but eager to reset relations, the White House has invited Modi to Washington. Julie McCarthy, NPR News, New Delhi.
The oil industry is pushing back against tougher rules for rail cars after a string of fiery accidents. An industry-funded report claims that the crude being shipped from the Northern Plains is similar to other light crudes and no more dangerous. Oil trains in the U.S. and Canada have been involved in at least 8 major accidents during the last year, including an explosion in Quebec that killed 47 people. An actor who starred in a police drama is now in the custody of Los Angeles authorities on suspicion of shooting his wife to death in their home. Michael Jace played a police officer in the hit TV show The Shield. His bail has been set at $1 million. I'm Jim Hawk, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, a source for what works in education. Learn more at edutopia.org.
It's 11:06 at 90.1 WABE, streaming live at wabe.org. Good Tuesday evening. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Joining us for this 2014 primary special, former Cobb County State Senator Chuck Clay, who is a former state GOP chairman, and Clark Atlanta political science professor William Boone. We're looking at the races at the top of the ticket as we just got past the top of the hour. On the Democratic side, in the governor's race, of course, Jason Carter, Atlanta State Senator, unopposed. He will move on to face Nathan Deal in the general election. Governor Deal easily winning the Republican primary for governor with 72% of the vote over David Pennington and John Barge. On the Republican U.S. Senate race, it has gotten very tight right now. David Perdue holding where he's been pretty much all night, 30% of the vote. He is in first place in that crowded field. Jack Kingston in second with 27% of the vote. Karen Handel moving up in terms of percentage with 21% of the vote. But she has still about 30,000 votes to make up to catch Jack Kingston for that number two spot in a runoff. And let's go to some of those campaign headquarters right now. WABE's Michelle Alloy is with frontrunner David Perdue right now at the DoubleTree Hotel in Atlanta. Michelle. Michelle, are you there?
Yes. Dennis, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. Go ahead.
Okay. David Perdue just gave his acceptance speech here at the DoubleTree in Buckhead. There was lots of excitement with the crowd, lots of cheers of outsider, outsider. Perdue says with his wins, he has defeated 3 career politicians, and there's one left to go. You know, who that might be and who he runs against is still unclear, as you said earlier. But Jack Kingston and Karen Handel are sort of neck and neck right now. Still, Perdue says he's the only one polls show can beat the Democratic nominee, Michelle Nunn.
All right, WABE's Michelle Alloy at David Perdue's headquarters. The third place runner right now is Karen Handel, former Fulton County Commission Chair, former Secretary of State. WABE's Michelle Wirth is with Handel at the DoubleTree Hotel in Roswell. Michelle.
Dennis, people here are still remaining optimistic despite Handel continuing to trail Kingston and Perdue. Handel herself came and addressed supporters, and she said it's going to be a long night, but she thinks that things are going to turn in her favor.
It's going to be close, but I feel really good about where we are and that we're going to close this gap and be able to make sure that we have a truly unwavering conservative in this runoff so that the people of Georgia really do have a choice come July 22nd.
About an hour ago, Senator Josh McCoon said a New York Times model predicted that Handel would gain enough votes to get a seat in the runoff. But a few minutes ago, someone who is doing that modeling said on Twitter that they think that Handel will keep making up ground, but will probably lose by a couple of points or more. Dennis?
WABE's Michelle Wirth with Karen Handel at the DoubleTree Hotel in Roswell. On the Democratic side, Michelle Nunn easily defeated three rivals to take the nomination to face the survivor of that crowded Republican race. WABE's Jim Burris was with Michelle Nunn's campaign. He joins us now in the studio. Jim, obviously, they would have been surprised had they lost, so it was not exactly something where you just get that big burst of enthusiasm, but still, it has to be a very satisfying win for them.
It was, because when you think about Michelle Nunn's campaign, it really kind of started off as grassroots. There was not a lot of movement behind it. And she really built this campaign, has a lot of support behind her now, and they really feel that she is a contender for this win, whoever the Republican is going to be. And I asked, does it matter? You know, if it's David Perdue, are you going to do things differently than if it's Karen Handel? The answer they gave me was no. And they're going to keep this, the word that they used, civility. And I actually asked Michelle Nunn when I spoke with her, if they come out swinging, if the Republican nominee comes out swinging, will you stand behind that? And she actually stopped short of saying absolutely no negative campaigning.
So I think we're going to have an opportunity for a real contrast, and I think it's going to be between someone who promises collaboration across party lines and actually a focus on getting things done, again, in a collaborative and civil way, against those that are promising more acrimony and inflexibility.
If they come out swinging with that acrimony, are you going to keep the stance of politeness?
Well, I think they have their own fight to continue for a bit longer, and so I'll continue to have my message to Georgians, reaching out to all Georgians and asking them for their participation and inviting them into the leadership that I think represents their values.
And Dennis, you have to think that no matter who the winner is, there's going to be a lot of national Republican money coming in to try to defeat Michelle Nunn. So it's interesting how long and how well her campaign can stand up against that as we head toward November.
And let's turn now to Jim Burris. Thanks very much. Let's turn now to our two experts here, Professor William Boone of Clark Atlanta University and former state GOP chair Chuck Clay. Did anything, obviously, a candidate who has run on trying to be appealing to the reasonable center is going to say what she said to Jim Burris. But Professor Boone, did you hear anything there that surprised you?
Not at this point. Although she did mention the fact that she's trying to take the high ground very early on. Mm-hmm. And if indeed she's taken a position, if the campaign turns nasty, it's because the other fellow has turned nasty and I have to defend my record or defend myself. I think that's probably high ground that she's probably trying to take right now. But at this point, no. She's run a rather civil campaign because she had no opposition. She's run a civil campaign thus far. And she wants to I think also she is probably projecting one of the national themes that Democrats are going to try to put out these days, too. This whole business about collaboration, compromise, and the old way of doing things in the Senate.
You don't need to be afraid of us, in other words.
Right, yeah. Here I am. You know, you can talk to me.
But Chuck Clay, isn't one of the other rules of campaigning, you have to define your opponent before they define you. So
yes.
How will she be able to keep that vow of having a conversation when a lot of campaigns are about shouting?
One, there's no guarantee of that. At a certain point in time, independent groups and independent dollars are going to be out there trying to define both sides. And anybody who says politics isn't personal, just never run a race for school class president or for the U.S. Senate, for that matter. I'm not predicting that it necessarily will. I do think there is a little different atmosphere. This one is actually new faces, new places. I know Jack Kingston has been a longtime veteran of the Georgia political scene, but he's never been the bridge burner. He's never been a poke in the eye. So I think while there will be some of that, I really think it'll be an interesting campaign on who can deliver on what's most important to Georgia, which is define how we're going to create jobs, how do we grow the future for our children, how do we find ways to invest in infrastructure. Everybody says they want compromise, but that means basically compromise means do what I want, and that's a compromise. So, you know, do they really want that? But I think right now you've got some very capable candidates that I do think allow us for in this race in Georgia. Maybe I'm going to be wildly optimistic or a foolish Pollyanna, but really focus on those things that I do think are critical for Georgia.
But you mentioned the
particularly
outside.
If it's a David Perdue and a Michelle Nunn, mm-hmm. neither who have a political record to rip apart.
But you mentioned the outside money, though.
Yeah, the
and
PAC
that's
money.
Gonna,
sure.
And with control of the Senate at stake, with the best intentions perhaps from both of them, assuming it's David Perdue on the Republican side, will they be able to control the messages that come in from outside of their own campaigns?
If they follow the law, they can't.
The stakes are so high.
If they follow
high.
The law, they can't. And there will be those dollars. And I think sometimes it does more harm than good. And if Georgia gets to be looking like a competitive state, it will be pouring in here like a rainstorm that we've never
right.
seen.
I think PACs going to be at our front door every day, a pack of PACs, quite frankly. There's no way to control that message from those PACs.
Maybe puts Georgia back in the national scene as being a state to watch. And I do hope it stays focused on really what is the future in the candidate's view and how to get there.
But the stakes are so high.
It is.
The stakes are very high for the Democrats and for the Republicans.
Let's take a look at
speaking. Now, you're going to know whether or not anybody ever stole a can of Coca-Cola when they're in the third grade back in elementary school somewhere. And I just don't think people really care about that sort of thing.
No, they don't.
Opposition
I
research.
Hope they don't. Yes.
Let's take a look at some of the House races right now. One of the ones that's been closely watched is the Democratic race for the 4th District, and that is like a general election because there's no Republican in that race. Hank Johnson, the incumbent, still leading Tom Brown, the Democrat, but again, slow returns coming in. We've got about a quarter of the precincts reporting so far, actually a little bit less than that. Hank Johnson with 56%, Tom Brown with 44%, but we're only talking about a margin of just over 2,000 votes. So this is still very early. It's going to probably be a long night or at least a couple of hours before we know who has won that one. Taking a look at some of the other congressional races, and there are some open seats here because some of the Republican members of Congress have decided to run for the U.S. Senate. Looking at the 10th district, this is Paul Brown's old district. There's going to be a runoff, and it appears it will be between Jody Heiss and Mike Collins, each with 33% of the vote. Donna Sheldon, one of the leaders of the Republicans in the state legislature, a distant third with 15%. And that's with most of the precincts in, about two-thirds of the precincts reporting. So it appears it'll be a Heiss-Collins runoff in the 10th. In the 11th district, this is Phil Gingrey's old district. Barry Loudermilk with 39% of the vote, a substantial lead over former Congressman Bob Barr. But he has 25%, and that gives him a big lead over Tricia Pridemore in third. She has 16%, and just under half of the precincts reporting in that one. Congressman David Scott easily cruising to victory over Michael Owens in the Democratic primary in District 13. We'll be back with more results. We're going to take a look at some of the big battles in the Fulton County Commission, including John Eaves, the incumbent chair, fighting for survival there against former Atlanta City Council president and now Fulton County Commissioner Rob Pitts. That's all coming up in just a moment on 90.1 WABE. It's 11:20, and this is Primary Night 2014, a WABE News special on 90.1 WABE. It's a pleasure to have you with us. I'm Dennis O'Hare with Clark Atlanta political science professor William Boone and former state GOP chair Chuck Clay. Let's take a look now and give you an update on one of the more contentious races for Congress, that involving Hank Johnson, the incumbent Democrat in the 4th Congressional District. He's facing a primary challenge from former DeKalb Sheriff Thomas Brown. Right now, with just under about a third of the precincts, actually just under a quarter of the precincts reporting, Johnson leads Brown 56% to 44%, but we're talking about a margin of only 2,000 votes or so. So it's a long way before this one's over. Lisa George is at Hank Johnson's headquarters right now, and that's at Joliet in South DeKalb County. Lisa.
Dennis, there's a big powwow going on behind closed doors with Hank Johnson and his campaign team and Atlanta Mayor Kasim Reed, who arrived here within the hour. They are just waiting for the Secretary of State to update his website so they can see what the latest returns are in. Hank Johnson very much wants to go ahead and declare victory, but he's not quite ready to do so yet.
And is that because of, are you seeing the same small number of precincts that we are? Is that really the problem here?
That's exactly the problem. And as I mentioned last hour, the returns are in from Rockdale, the returns are in from Newton. What they're waiting on are the crucial parts of DeKalb County.
WABE's Lisa George at Hank Johnson's headquarters, and I imagine at Tom Brown's headquarters, they're also enduring that wait. Let's take a look at one of the more interesting county commission sets of races that we haven't had a chance to talk about yet. That's in Fulton County, and this is where the districts were redrawn primarily by a GOP legislature to give Republicans a little more oomph on the county commission. They drew a couple of Democrats into a district with each other, Emma Darnell and William Edwards. And right now, those two are barely just a few votes apart as we look at that. Emma Darnell with just over 50%, William Edwards with almost 50%. Right now, we'll get back to that in just a moment. But right now, joining us on the line is Congressman Jack Kingston, who is right now running in second place in that crowded U.S. Senate Republican field. Congressman Kingston, welcome.
Thank you very much, Dennis. It's great to be with you.
Are you surprised at how David Perdue has managed to maintain his lead so far? And do you think you can withstand Karen Handel once the Metro Atlanta results start to come in?
Well, we are somewhat surprised by David Perdue, but somewhat not surprised because he put in $3 to $4 million of his own money, bought a lot of advertising, had a very well-oiled machine going on. So, you know, he's run a good campaign. Karen Handel has also run a good campaign. She's a prodigious worker, and all of us have been out on the streets for over a year now, shaking every hand that we can. We do believe that we can maintain the margin and finish this race in a second-place slot, but there's still a lot of numbers out there that we're waiting to hear from, and so we're not taking any victory laps or high-fiving anyone at this point.
In terms of things like the Port of Savannah, that you obviously, because that's your district, that vote came in today. You had to go up for that. Are you seeing Republicans taking a more, not less conservative, but more pragmatic approach to infrastructure and projects like that and putting them more at the top of their list than perhaps social issues or some of the things that that Democrats like to paint Republicans with?
Well, I think that we are very interested in economic issues, jobs, energy, tax simplification, issues like that. You know, the cost-benefit ratio for the Savannah port deepening is a dollar spent and a $5.5 return. And that's the kind of investment that I think American taxpayers are saying, okay, I can go along with that. 352,000 jobs in the state of Georgia are related to the port, and 62% of what goes on down there is export. So it opens up the door to all kinds of new market opportunities around the globe. And I do think that tax dollars you know, taxpayers are saying, you know what, this is okay.
But in order to get a Port of Savannah, for instance, this requires working across party lines, across jurisdictional lines. Mayor Kasim Reed has been one of the champions of the Port of Savannah. When you have a campaign like we've seen on the GOP side, where everybody is saying, I can stop Obama better than you can, does that really translate into reality once someone is elected?
Well, you know, I've come from Chatham County, and Chatham County elected Barack Obama 55%, but I got 53% with solid conservative credentials. I have a NRA rating of A+. I have a American Conservative Union rating of 96%. But people in Chatham County know that I'm willing to engage and do what's best for the state of Georgia, what's best for the community in America, and I think that they respect my conservative philosophy, but they know that I'm a guy who wants to get something done, and that I want solutions. And I believe that that's what people are looking for in the next U.S. senator.
Assuming that, let's say for the moment that you get into that runoff, you are in second place right now, how do you try to overcome David Perdue's, what appears to be his vote advantage right now, and where do you go to pick up those votes, whether it's from the other candidates or from the voters that voted either for Perdue or to make sure that your own base comes out? How do you overcome what may be his first place edge?
Well, Nathan Deal, when he was in a runoff with Karen Handel, faced somebody who was 12 points over him, and was able to get a 40% of the vote on the first round. Mr. Perdue's probably going to finish up around 31, maybe 32%. We're right now behind him by only 4 points. So it's not that big of a gap. And if we look at it historically, the second place finisher in the state of Georgia always fares very well in the runoff.
Congressman Jack Kingston, thanks very much for taking the time to be with us on what was a very busy night for you. We really appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks a million. I appreciate y'all.
Thank you. Congressman Jack Kingston, we've got just a couple of minutes left here. Chuck Clay, Professor Boone, real quickly, anything that you heard from Kingston that surprised you at all or that gave you an idea of what he's going to do should he make the runoff?
Assuming it stays where it is. Who will be the first phone call? What will be that first phone call he makes as soon as dawn breaks
Karen
tomorrow?
Handel. No doubt.
You got
Karen
it.
And I think he's quite right about the fact that the first place winner in these runoffs, he usually gathers all the votes he or she is going to get. And now it comes down to the second, third, and fourth people trying to garner support behind that second place person.
Very good observation.
Yeah, that's what's
going to
happen.
Very real observation.
Yeah.
Let's quickly recap, and we'll get back to Fulton County just very quickly because John Eaves and Rob Pitts are just a few votes apart right now in the battle for that Fulton County Commission chair seat. Emma Darnell and Bill Edwards also just a few votes apart in District 6. Marvin Arrington and Brenda Muhammad, former Atlanta school board member, the two leaders right now in District 5 on the Democratic side. On the Republican side in District 3, Lee Morris, 56% over what he would need to win without a runoff in District 3. It's 1129 at listener-supported 90.1 WABE Atlanta. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Thanks to Chuck Clay. Thanks to Professor Boone for being with us. We really appreciate it. We'll have to have you back real soon.
Thank you. And to all those candidates out there, win or lose, we're proud of you.
Thanks very much, Dennis. It's been a pleasure.
It was a real pleasure to have you both come back again. Once again, David Perdue and Jack Kingston, the front runners right now in that U.S. Senate Republican race. Michelle Nunn, the winner on the Democratic side. In the governor's race, Nathan Deal easily beat back two challengers to win the Republican nomination for a second term. And Jason Carter, the Democratic winner without opposition. Hank Johnson and Tom Brown engaged in a battle for votes, but also a battle to find out what's happened to the vote counting in District 4. That may take quite a while. Bob Barr and Barry Loudermilk, the front runners in District 11. This is 90.1 WABE Atlanta. Join Steve Goss for Morning Edition and all of the results from tonight. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Have a great night.